Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 16 of season 9 of Move Your Own Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Jim O'Kane, the godfather of the Movies by Minute community. Welcome back to the show, Jim. Always a pleasure having you on.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Rob. I appreciate it. I don't know if I'm the godfather of podcasts of Movies by Minutes. I feel more like the Fredo of Movies by Minutes. I'm just kind of sailing along here.
If you were the Fredo, you wouldn't have made it past season two.
That's true. Wow. But here we are. And here we are, four diehards in. It's amazing. I appreciate your fortitude.
I haven't been struggling through all of them. The first three, I flew through. It was a lot of fun. Four is not as good, and I'm dreading five, which I will be starting, in another few weeks. That's the way it is. You know, it's when you're a completionist like me who likes to follow rules, you don't have a choice when the Movies by Minute community says you have to follow a rule. And the rule is if you start a franchise, you got to finish it. So, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I figured out a clever way of finishing it, you know, by doing 5 minutes at a time and putting the two together, you know. So then we'll move on to other nice endeavors. You know, I'll be season 10. I'll be back with the movie that I will enjoy doing minute by minute. So I'm looking forward to finishing season 9, the shortened season 9 to get to season 10. Do you remember your background with this particular movie?
I remember not going to see it in the theaters because I was kind of after 3 I was kind of McClained out, and this one I watched it on, I don't even think I watched it on HBO. I think I watched it on TBS or one, or maybe Spike.
Oh, wow.
It's been a while since I first watched it, and I was like, with commercial breaks and everything like that. Eventually, I saw the whole thing. I think it was on HBO a couple of times, so I've watched it without commercials. But it was the only thing that I remember from it from first watching it was it's the most Jersey centric of the diehards. It features Rutgers,
and it has 2 minutes of Rutgers.
Yeah, and Camden's in there somehow,
he's in Camden at Rutgers. He was on the Camden campus.
Right. Yeah, and so it's and we can't talk about it this one, but we're going to have a rather famous Garden Stater in a very an upcoming episode.
We'll hold a famous Garden Stater. Yes. Yeah. You know, I'm also from the Garden State. So.
Oh, of course. Yeah. No. And we're two Jersey boys here talking about Jersey movies. So it's very good.
Exactly. I mean, this movie features a little more Baltimore than it should, but we'll get there also. I think even this week we're going to have some. In the next few days we're going to have a lot of Baltimore stuff too. So we will have what to talk about in Baltimore. I can guarantee you that I'm going to shock you that there's even more Baltimore than you think.
Wow. Okay. It's not quite a Hairspray level of Baltimore, but
no.
It's up there.
No. You'll see. You'll see. I think it's coming either. It's coming either tomorrow or the day after. There's a shock that something takes place in Baltimore that shouldn't be taking place in Baltimore. it's going to be on Wednesday that we'll talk about that. I'm pretty sure it's Wednesday, but we'll wait and see when we get there. Episode 16 begins with Bowman getting shocked by the facts, and ends with John getting ready to fly. So basically, we ended things yesterday with them finally figuring out who's actually behind all of this, nobody seems to know. And then Bowman seems to see the picture and he goes, oh, it's Thomas Gabriel. And then John responds, you know this guy? He goes, I worked with him. He was DOD's chief programmer for infrastructure security. After 9/11, he's the guy that told Joint Chiefs the system was vulnerable. He was pushing for a total overhaul, but they wouldn't listen. Gabriel's not exactly people-friendly. You think so? When he tried to go public, they crucified him, destroyed his reputation, froze assets. After that, he disappeared. So, again, I've said this numerous times in this season and in possibly in other you know, movies that I've talked about. I always dislike the fact that many times they make the bad guy someone who used to work for the good guys. You know, like the trope is that the best guy to be a bad guy is someone who used to be a good guy that went bad. You know, he was one of the best of the good guys, and then now he's bad.
Yeah, you know, renegade.
Exactly. They do that. They do that in the Star Trek movies. They do that in Mission Impossible. You know, they do that in James Bond movies. You know, it's like, come on, make it a little. You know, give us bad guys that can be bad guys. I mean, again, they did it. They did in the first, let's say the first and the third Die Hards. Let's keep Colonel Stewart out of there. Because Colonel Stewart, he was a good guy before. But, you know, Hans and Simon are definitely bad guys who grew up bad guys. Yeah.
Yeah, they should have just brought in another Gruber. The world needs more Grubers for these movies.
That's right. 100%. They're never enough Grubers in this world.
Yeah.
And so basically, as this is all going on, and they're giving us this exposition, so we see the two feds, you know, that they brought in. That you know, you have the Tim Russ from Star Trek, you know, who has one line in the entire movie, and here he just gives a dirty look that, oh, we know it. Who's Thomas Gabriel? That's about it.
Well, his payday was good for the week then.
it's somewhat of a waste to have him on there, you know. But, you know, what can you do? And, you know, but I like also the way they give us this explanation. You know, it's good exposition where John is being briefed quickly by Bowman about Gabriel, about who this guy is. So he's telling us at the same time, you know, this is a guy who was a good guy, and he said that there were problems and nobody listened to him. And then, you know, at that point, they don't really say why they decided to basically crucify him and destroy his reputation. Sounds to be a little harsh to do somebody who has a differing opinion. You know, you'd think that that would be something that you would do to somebody if they actually commit some sort of crime or problem. At that point, then you would want to go and crucify him or destroy his reputation. No, I don't know. It seems a little strange that's what they would do to him.
Yeah, but you know, it's so the movie can happen. So.
Yeah, of course, it's part of the plot. I'm aware of that.
Yeah,
but you know, that one of the things is that it feels less plausible by the way that they explain it. That's the thing that bothers me about it. You know. Because they give us an answer and an excuse as to why he necessarily went renegade, but it doesn't really add up. You know, something seems missing from it.
Yeah, I was thinking that there was a TV movie back around 1982 or 83, and it was called Special Report, and it was about a nuclear weapon that was going to. And the main guy, I think it was the dad from Family Ties, was the main guy, and he was an Department of Energy expert on nuclear power, and he was trying to warn about how easy it was to get plutonium. That the security was so lax, anybody could get plutonium, and
well,
people
come on,
need
in
to understand.
1985, you could probably buy plutonium at the corner drugstore.
Yeah, well, no, you buy it from the Libyans and then build a time machine. So
no, but in 1955, Doc Brown says, "Oh, well, you know, in 1985, you can probably find plutonium."
Yeah,
in the street corner, but in 1955, a little harder to come by.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, it's in Special Report. What he did was he built a I think it was a Hiroshima type bomb, and he brought it to Charleston, South Carolina, and was going to demand that I think he wanted to demand complete nuclear disarmament if his terms weren't met. And he wound up having cancer and he didn't really care about living, so they gave him all these sympathetic things about why he was the bad guy. But it was a similar thing that he was a good guy. He was trying to do the right, his badness was trying to do the right thing. And you know, I mean, that's just the most common trope to, well, you know, every villain thinks of himself as a hero in his own story. So
Right.
he was considering himself being the good guy, but then, well, I don't want to spoil the ending for anybody, for if you haven't seen Special Report. I know it's on YouTube. It's worth a watch. It's very dated, but it's an interesting, from a television budget, they did a really good scary job in the show.
Interesting. Now I have to I it sounded familiar with the name, and then when now that you explained it, possibly it's not something that I've seen yet, so I guess I will have to add that to my list if I have yet to see that. I mean, Michael Gross was in a lot of TV movies. He you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, he was one of the go-to guys on TV movies.
Specifically, it's called Special Bulletin was the name of the show. And wow, I didn't realize it was directed by Edward Zwick, who did Shakespeare in Love and The Last Samurai.
He did Glory.
Yeah, he also created 30 Something, the TV show 30 Something.
Special Bulletin was with Ed Flanders. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one
Okay.
with Saint Elsewhere. Yeah.
Okay. No, yes, I have seen that one. I loved it. It was actually great.
Yeah.
But I don't think Michael Gross was in it.
Okay, I guess
No,
I.
Michael Gross was not in it. That's why you threw me off on that one.
Okay, yeah, I don't know who I don't know who the oh okay, it was the similar looking guy, David Clennon. He was the boss
Oh
on
yeah.
30 Something.
Okay. Well, David
He
Clennon,
played
I
Miles
always.
Trentell.
Well, you know where I know David Clennon from. And
From the Earth to the
that's
Moon,
from the X
I
to the
would
Moon,
assume.
exactly.
Yeah.
Professor Silver,
Yeah.
exactly. Okay, yes, David
Yeah.
Clennon.
And while we're at From the Earth to the Moon, Lane Smith is one of the reporters that's
Yes.
in Special Bulletin. So well worth a watch. So
Oh,
join us
sure.
here for the Special Bulletin Minute coming soon. I'm sure Rob, you'll be getting that out there in no time.
That one I'll leave to you. There you go. You can have that one. So
Okay.
come on, we there has to be give and take here, Jim.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I'll see what I can do about it.
Okay. Remember, they're still in this fake place in West Virginia that doesn't really exist. Where they killed Mai at the end of last week. And then Matt says, "We got a serious problem." John goes, "Well, hold on a minute. What?" And he goes, I think we need to get out of here right now. They're sending the gas lines here. Gas lines? What gas lines?" And then John looks at the screen and goes, "Christ, oh, all of them. See that? Those flashing arrows? That's not good. All that's coming here? Yeah, I think we got to go." So John then continues talking to Bowman, and he goes, "Hey, listen, I got to go. I got to go. Just fine, Thomas Gabriel. McLean, McLean." And then John says to Farrell, let's go, finish this up. And right now, finish this up. Come on, let's go." And then we start seeing that there's a fireball coming towards them and stuff like that. So, from the distance. It's pretty humorous the way that the whole thing is happening here, because again, this isn't very plausible with the way that they present it. I mean, I you probably know more about the way gas lines work, but for some reason, I don't think it would work this way. Do you think it
Yeah,
would?
I think there's probably cutoff valves for keeping, you know, backwash or whatever the back pressure would. I would think there'd be some kind of a release valve or something to get rid of a high, you know, high pressure. And it certainly wouldn't be on fire because you need oxygen in the line to keep it burning, unless the pipes were rupturing on the way back.
Right.
So it just, yeah, it's a little bit not feasible. But you know,
Yeah,
we
I
don't go
love
to
the fact
diehard
that.
movies for, yeah, it's
That's
it.
true. We don't go to the Die Hard movies just for feasibility, but you want it to be more believable. What can I tell you?
Yeah, no, I think
So.
of, I mean, my feasibility thing is that my benchmark for that in the Die Hard movies is the same device was used in both Die Hard and My Favorite Year. By if there's always a handy canvas fire hose nearby that you can tie off and swing across different floors of a building successfully. So I've
So you're saying that Die Hard copied that from My Favorite Year?
That's my suspicion, but I have yet to confirm that hypothesis.
An interesting hypothesis that I've never thought of that. I've
Well,
seen My Favorite Year, but I never made the connection. So that's pretty good.
if I ever do my favorite minute, I think is what I would call it if I were going to do my favorite year, I'd ask the currently 87-year-old Richard Benjamin all about that, but we'll see if he feels like he's been plagiarized.
And I love the graphics here where John and Farrell are looking at the thing and it just shows like flashing arrows
Yeah.
on a board. It doesn't even look very it's not digital even.
No, it's
It's
like a cartoon kind of thing.
that's right.
It's
Exactly.
yeah, and you're watching the Delmarva Peninsula getting knocked out at the same time there.
That's right. And then John looks out the window and sees the fireball coming towards them and decides that they really need to get out of there. Then he grabs Farrell and the two of them run across the room as the room is also falling apart. And we see all of these explosions coming from through the pipeline. Now again, if the pipeline is exploding along the way, I don't know if it would still continue going
Yeah,
through the
that,
pipeline
yeah.
itself. But
Yeah, the.
okay, and then but John and Farrell still have enough time to run down the stairs, and get out of there. And then they find the van, and they jump inside the van. John just like throws him in the van as the building is just being blown to bits, and they don't even have to put on seat belts, and the van gets blown across the room, but they're still fine.
Yeah.
The building exploded, but the van is fine. It's
Yeah, and the van must have been
definitely
completely
made.
empty. There's nothing rolling around in the van except the two of
That's right. That's right. Well, come on. Why do you need anything in the van?
them.
Come on, that would be a waste. Why do you need
Yeah.
stuff in? So yeah, it's just again, I think one of the reasons why I like this movie less than the original Die Hard trilogy is this doesn't always feel like a Die Hard movie. It feels more like an action movie.
Yeah, and
Which goes with the time. I mean, in 2007, around this time, that's when they started changing over all of these different franchises to action movies. That's when James Bond started becoming more action related. When they were dealing with that stuff, Mission Impossible started becoming more action at the time. This movie's another example. That's when Fast and Furious started becoming popular. People were more they knew that the moviegoers were more interested in seeing an action movie than, I guess, more of a cerebral type of Die Hard movie.
Yeah, it's and we're also seeing the main character is being told things rather than figuring things out. In if you think about the original Die Hard, he was basically MacGyvering his way through most of the plot, being able to figure out how he can outsmart the terrorists. But in
Right.
this, and we're going to see this in the next several episodes, McClane doesn't really figure things. He's just listening to other people telling him stuff and explaining the plot and explaining the solution too.
That's true. That actually makes a lot of sense. And again, a lot of debris falling around, and then we're back with Gabriel. Again, I love also the Bluetooth earpieces that they're using in this movie.
Yeah.
They look closer to what they used to use in Star Trek.
Yes. Yeah. As some large bolt kind of thing.
That's right. Exactly.
Wow.
And at this point, Gabriel is just looking at the computer screen, trying to figure out what has happened, and he sees that the transmission has been disconnected. So therefore, they no longer can be see. Apparently, they believe that John and Farrell now must be dead. But
Yeah.
did you look at the screens of what they're showing on this?
No,
So
I.
it says transmission lost, and then there's another window that says connection failed, but they misspell it. It's FAILD.
Ooh.
Failed without an E.
Failed it.
Again, it goes to show that nobody expected, 18 years after this movie came out, for someone to be going through it minute by minute, or 5 minutes by 5 minutes, and figuring out that they, misspelled something on the computer.
Yeah, and it's weird that, like it is, it we aren't doing movie they weren't doing movies by minutes back then, but they knew about the pause control on DVDs, and at the time that would have already been in the Blu-ray era, so it's very, very peculiar. Well, although maybe it's just it's giving the finger to people who are doing it and say, "See, there, it's misspelled. Are you happy?" It's
Maybe it could be, and then we see Trey look over at Casper, and Casper looks back over at Trey, and there go, and then Gabriel just gets up and walks away. It's a relatively silent moment the whole thing, and then we're back to the site where with John and Farrell, and there's a lot of smoke. The building is smoking, and there's still fires happening. It reminds me of the end of Die Hard, where they're showing
Oh
us
yeah. Yeah, just what's left, the aftermath.
that's right. What the aftermath after John, jumped into the fountain. He gets out
Yeah.
of the fountain, and we see, sparks flying, and there's a lot of debris. And somehow this van managed to survive, even though the door was broken open. Even more surprising is that the two people in the van survived.
Yeah.
And Farrell and John both get out. John goes, "You okay?" And he just gets a response with a cough. That's it. Look to the left and cough. That's more or less.
Yeah.
And he was ready to cry. You see that Farrell is not—he's not built for this type of thing.
Yeah. He didn't know this was going to come up, being a hacker.
And then John goes, "Let's go. Come on. Gotta get you out of here." And he goes, "Oh, what's the point? Man, what is the point?" He goes, "Knock it off. Come on. This has something to do with the code you wrote for them. All right. Now think. Come on. Help us win." And then, first of all, I love the fact that it just happens to be coincidentally that Farrell is the guy who wrote the final code that they needed.
To take over, yeah.
His is the most important code that all the other codes, are you don't need the programmer. This one, we need him in order to save the day, type of thing. Again, that's the way that's the way the script needed to be written. But it's still fun to think about the fact that they killed all of these hackers, and the one that they weren't able to get just happens to be the one that John McClane has been assigned to, and this happens to be the guy who was able to break into the Social Security building.
Yeah, survival of the fittest there.
Completely. And then Farrell looks at John and goes, "Win? When do we start winning? Take a look around. Are you out of your mind? It look like we're even close to winning? We just got the shit kicked out of us." "What? You think I'm holding out on you? There's something I'm just not telling you. If I knew what they wanted, I would tell you. I would happily tell you." Jesus. Just the way that John just looks at him, he's just like, nah.
Yeah.
John's not used to someone like this.
Yeah, somebody that, yeah, Talking no time for defeatism at this point. This is
That's
we're
right.
barely in act one of the movie.
Well, no,
Yeah,
we're
we're
beyond
a bit,
one,
yeah.
but I mean, come on, we are more than an hour. We're almost at an hour and a half. We're right now an hour and 16 minutes through the movie, hour and 17 minutes. So, yeah, we're more than the halfway point at this point. And John is just amazed at what's going on. And then when they get outside, they start seeing that all the power around them is just going out, and they do a great job of showing how the power is just going out all over the city. And they bring us into these various places. We see we're in a hospital, we're in an airport. I think the airport is a reference to Die Hard 2. That's what I would think.
Yeah.
And then
And the
final
power of
shot is in an elevator.
the power outage is the tribute to Die Hard 1.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I also love the fact that they only show us foreign planes. We see Air Canada and Air France.
Yeah.
There's like three Air Canada planes and two Air France planes.
Well, you got to think of that international market. It's like, hey, Canada content. There you go.
But what's even great is first of all, when the lights go out in the airport. So first of all, they're very smart and they left the lights on in the planes. That already
Yeah.
worked. That's good. But if you look in the sky, you see three planes that are way too close together. If you look at the 3 minute and 14 second mark of these 5 minutes, you can see it. It looks like something out of
Okay.
Star
Oh,
Wars,
yeah.
because you have like three X-wings that are close to by. Okay, that makes sense. But three commercial jets that are that close, I don't know.
Ooh, not good, yeah.
And then we see an elevator shaft, and the elevator, then inside the elevator we see Lucy Gennaro McLean, looking very somber. And then the lights go out, and she looks up, and she's not sure what's going on. And then they show us a shot of, I guess, the Eastern Seaboard,
Yeah, there
where.
you're looking at the Delmarva Peninsula and then into the Chesapeake area there. So very.
And then the lights all go out. But I mean, we'll talk about this more over the next few days. But isn't Lucy in Camden? So
Yeah.
it's going all the way up to New Jersey at that point. Where all the power seems to be going out. So
Yeah.
we'll have to wait and see where she really is. He's not sure what to do. And then Farrell has an idea, and he goes, "The Warlock, the Warlock." Oh. And he looks at his phone, and he goes, "There goes the cell phone." John has a great line. He goes, "They knocked out the satellites out of the skies now?" Goes, "No, the battery ran out." He goes, "Listen, we should go see him." "Ooh, the Warlock. We should drive to his house. He's not that far away. He's in Baltimore." He goes, "Can't go to a Warlock's house. Hey, you want me to help you? This is me helping you. Okay, trust me. We got to go see the Warlock. It's our only hope." Now, is that a Star Wars reference or not?
Yeah.
Way that
When
he
the
says
yeah. When the guy is one of the stars of Galaxy Quest, you gotta give him some slack for bringing up Star Wars.
No, I don't mind. It's just the way he says it's our only hope. "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. So help me, Warlock. You're my help me, Freddy Warlock. You're my only hope." I don't know. I actually looked up the term warlock. Now, do you know what a warlock is?
It's a male witch, I know that, but I don't know where the phrase comes from.
It is a male practitioner of witchcraft and the counterpart to a witch. But you see, I decided to go a little different direction of trying to figure out where the term came from. It started being used around 1000 AD, and it usually referred to the devil himself, not necessarily a. And then eventually it turned into the male equivalent of the witch. And then in Scotland they started referring to it as that it's men who made pacts with the devil, and then became male witches, stuff like this. And
Yeah,
they use this
I
taser
only
gun.
learned it from, I only learned it from Bewitched. I remember that
I was
Samantha's
gonna say
dad,
that. That
yeah,
was
Maurice,
that's
yeah.
right. I was gonna say that. That's where I know that word from also. But I decided to also look up different other meanings or other uses of warlock. And I found two that are really, really interesting. One of them is I know that you lived in Texas for a long time. Did you know there's a town called Warlock, Texas?
I did not know that. Wow.
Yeah, it's in the eastern part of Texas. It is approximately by air, the air distance between Warlock and Dallas. You're in Dallas, right?
Right, yeah, near Dallas.
Okay, so the air distance is 191 miles, and the driving distance is 224 miles.
Okay, so about as
And
far away as Houston.
it would have taken you 4 hours and 13 minutes to get there from Dallas.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry I'm not
Approximately.
there anymore. I would have gone to
Well,
investigate.
maybe when you go back to visit, you'll pass a sign that says Warlock. You'll be like, "Hey, I know that. We have another 4 hours to go to get to Dallas."
Oh, I see. It's up by Shreveport. Okay. And Texarkana over that way. Okay, the next time I'm cruising through East Texas, I will stop by and give you a report on Warlock, Texas. Interesting.
All right, and if you're going through Texarkana, so you must be trying to get some booze. Should I be calling you Smokey or the Bandit? Are you?
Oh. Well, no, it's a town that dreaded sundown, so it's probably all the warlocks that live nearby.
Okay, that could be too. And the second interesting thing I found of something that was called a warlock is it was the name of a racehorse. That was it won a few races in 1854, and it was the person who owned it, Anthony Nickel, also had another horse named Wizard. So he had a
Oh.
horse named Wizard and a horse named Warlock, and Wizard also was a horse that won him numerous things. I just thought it was really interesting that when I looked up what is Warlock and it
Yeah.
said a racehorse, I was like, oh, that would be really cool. And then it
Yeah,
makes sense
having
that people would that someone would name two horses obviously a few years apart, but they still would be within the same realm of what
Yeah,
the
Wizard
warlock
and
called.
Warlock. Yeah. That's a great name for a horse. I'd bet on it. Sounds Warlock the horse.
Okay, well you'll have to go back in time 170
Yeah,
kilometers
unfortunately, yeah.
for
I
that.
don't think it's
But
some plutonium.
exactly, there you go.
Yeah.
And at this point, then John turns to him and says, "How do you feel about flying?" He goes, "About what? You mean like with a pilot?" And then the next shot, we see them in a helicopter. And
That was handy, especially after the explosion.
yeah, of course, of course. It's a good thing that Mai didn't need it anymore, right?
Yeah, it's
But it's yeah. We were surprised that the van made it through the explosion, but the
Yeah.
fact that the helicopter that they landed on top of the building was still good. And what did
Sturdy,
you?
yeah, sturdy rotor, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've never flown a helicopter, but do you need like a key? Like how did?
It is not like even if you had a private pilot's license, it's a whole different way of flying. And to quote Leslie Nielsen, it's an entirely different way of flying altogether.
Yeah, exactly. It's an entirely different
entirely
way of
different way
flying.
of flying. Yes. So, but yeah, I mean, instead of holding onto the yoke to steer, you have a collective and a throttle, and it's my good friend Hal Bryan can do a helicopter, but I think that was after lots and lots of practice. I have tried helicopter simulators, and I just can't. There's a certain thing. It's kind of like patting your belly and rubbing your head. I can't get the rhythm right.
Yeah,
But
it's a
I
good thing you're
appreciate
only doing a
helicopter pilots.
simulator.
Yeah.
That's right. And John then looks over and sees that Farrell's having trouble putting on the seatbelt. And he goes, "Just stick it in there. That'll work." He goes, "You okay?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm kind of afraid of flying." Goes, "Yeah, I used to be terrified of flying." "Really?" "Yeah, I took some lessons. Face your fears, that kind of thing. Did it help?" "Not really." And then you know, as the engine begins to whir and the alarm beeps, so Farrell goes, "Is it supposed to be making that sound?" And John goes, "Oh yeah. Maybe we should drive. It'll be fun. It'll be like a road trip. Just take it easy." They say taking off is the hardest part. Really? I heard I to be honest with you, I did miss a couple of classes. You did? Really? But you have your license, right? I mean, you can fly one of these, right? And John just doesn't
No
reply
answer,
anymore.
yeah.
And then here we go. So it made me wonder. I mean, again, I like the fact that it's the same thing that they did the same thing in Indiana Jones, that you know, he learned how to fly a plane eventually, because he needed
Yeah.
it. Because they needed it in the movie, so they said, you know, he's been able to do it. So they did the same thing here with John McClane. You know, he.
Yeah.
So it, I, it, you know, he's not making fists with his toes, so he's good. He's in good shape from that perspective.
Yeah, he can fly with his shoes on. It's amazing.
That's right. That's right. So I decided that, okay, John was living in New York. So, like, do you have any idea about the what it takes to get a helicopter pilot license in New York?
I have no idea.
Okay, so in order to get a private license, you have to do at least 40 hours flight, and but if you know, if you want to do commercial, then you have to have at least 150 hours. They have a written exam that will cover aviation regulations, meteorology, navigation, and other relevant topics. You also have a practical flight test that you need to demonstrate your flying skills and knowledge. Obviously, you need medical certificate saying that you're healthy enough to be able to do it. How much do you think it would cost? Obviously, it's a range, you know,
Yeah,
depending on the flight school and stuff like that.
I'm guessing it would start at about $25,000 and work upwards.
Actually, it's cheaper than that. It's
Really?
usually anywhere, again, according to the site that I found, it's anywhere between 18,500 to 23,500.
Okay, I don't think I want to get in the $18,000 pilot's cabin.
And that doesn't include the examiner fee and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's
Wow.
you know, I don't know. I mean, we did see John's financial stuff, but I don't think he has $25,000
Yeah,
to pay for a you know, to get a pilot license. But then again, he didn't go to all the court all the classes, so.
maybe he just knew a guy.
Yeah. And
my first flight was in a helicopter in New York.
oh, wow.
I flew from New York from Newark Airport to the top of the Pan Am building, and then on to LaGuardia, and then on to JFK. That was the day after Christmas, 1967, when my family was going to Bermuda. My dad always wanted to fly in a helicopter, so we were living in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and the way we had to get on a plane in JFK. So one of the ways of doing it was we just got on a helicopter and flew over to JFK. And think of all the money we saved on parking.
I was gonna say it's probably a little cheaper to drive, but okay. Even
Yeah.
in 1967.
Yeah, it was.
Now the one other thing I wanted to mention that was listed on this website is about that they have financing options for students, you know, and they give a list of all the different ways of the financing, but at the end it has a thing that says, "Please note, we do not accept the GI Bill."
Really?
So yeah, so apparently if you know if you're a veteran,
You
you
should
can't
already know how
use
to fly a helicopter. Yeah.
it. So it depends on where you serve, but yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
As the helicopter starts to take off, this segment of 5 minutes ends.
Yes.
So Jim, did you have anything else you want to say about this that we might have missed?
No, it was fun. I mean, like you were saying, there's so many subtle Star Wars connections. I mean, we had Justin Long from Galaxy Quest, which was a Star Trek kind of connection. But then, this is my first interaction with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is of course General Syndulla from the other part of the Star Wars universe in Clone Wars and Ahsoka and Rebels and all that. So it's interesting to see all the blending. And in our next episode, we're going to get into more Star Wars,
A
Star
little
Trek
more,
stuff. So.
yes.
Just teasing it for later.
I prefer Star Wars. I'm more of a Star Wars guy.
They okay. each they each right. have they're the Coke and Pepsi of science fiction. So,
exactly. I'm quoting from tomorrow's episode. I mean, it's true, but I'm still quoting from tomorrow's episode.
Yeah.
All right. So today's segment will be Top Cop, where my guests will give their top five movie detectives / law enforcement agents, however you want to look at it. So, Jim, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Sure. Okay. Well, my number five, I have to admit, as I was sitting down and pondering all these things, I surprised myself in how my ordering went and how things came about. My number five was Eddie Valiant from Roger Rabbit. Bob Hoskins did a great job doing, you know, interacting with nothing and still giving you the feeling that he was talking to a 4-foot-high animated rabbit. One thing I found out while I was looking up more information about Eddie Valiant, I didn't realize the original, when they were doing test screenings or test footage to find out if it would work with blending live action and animation, was Eddie Valiant was played by Joey Pantolino, you know, Joey Pants from, you know, from a bunch of different things. So from The Matrix, you know, so there's a whole nother franchise that's out there. Yeah, he was my number five, Eddie Valiant. Number four is Jack Nicholson as Jake Geddes in both Chinatown and The Two Jakes. I like seeing him in Chinatown. It kind of puts the noir world on its ear because Jake Geddes was a more realistic 1930s detective. The moneymaker for detectives in the 30s was catching people being unfaithful to their spouses. So it started off with him taking, you know, surreptitiously taking pictures of someone having an affair. And I like that twist. So Jake would be my number four. Number three is Detective Arkady Renko from Gorky Park, played by the late William Hurt. He had a very interesting, it was a very brutal movie, and just an intriguing bit of detective work on screen, trying to figure things out and having him working with people. He was an interesting, complicated character by his decisions, especially at the end, in deciding not to leave the Soviet Union, because he was foremost loyal to his job. His job was to find justice and right wrongs, even in a Soviet society. So it was an intriguing number three there. Number two, I have to go with, I was torn. Humphrey Bogart has had so many great roles as a detective, Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe. But Philip Marlowe, I think, would be my number two for, he's my favorite detective of the Bogart detectives in The Big Sleep. The story is bonkers, trying to follow what's going on in The Big Sleep. There's so many different characters, so many different crimes and murders and all kinds of suspects and things like that. But he slogs through it all for the sake of General Sternwood. And I've enjoyed The Big Sleep is so rewatchable. I think I might even watch it again tonight. I enjoy that film a bunch. But my number one detective, the one that he makes me laugh, he makes me think, is Tommy Lee Jones as Lieutenant Gerard in both U.S. Marshals and of course, where, you know, he started out in The Fugitive. I just like his banter. You feel when he's with his crew, of U.S. Marshals, you feel like you're, well, like the TV, you know, the TV series went on for years, but Lieutenant Gerard was kind of a lone wolf in the TV series. But the Lieutenant Gerard in both The Fugitive and U.S. Marshals, you had this feeling of camaraderie with the rest of his team and the back and forth, especially as, you know, the aforementioned Joey Pants. They both would trade these barbs, and you felt like they knew they were a family almost. They've been, you know, a very close crew. So I'd say number one would be Lieutenant Gerard from The Fugitive.
Wow, that is a great list. I really like that. Thank you. And only one of them was been someone that was mentioned before. So
Oh,
you see.
wow.
All right, and now we will play the game, the daily game that's called State Your Motto. Okay, so obviously the U.S. name for this movie is Live Free or Die Hard. Live Free or Die is the state motto of what state, Jim?
Live Free or of
live
no,
free
okay,
or
yeah,
die is New Hampshire.
Yeah, Live Free or Die, yeah.
Yes. Okay. So what I basically the game is very simple. I will. You know, for every day, I have a different state that I will choose, and I will give you three possibilities as to what is the true state motto of that state. But every one of the choices that I give are real state mottos.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily for I'm not making up state
yeah,
mottos.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So for today, your state is Texas. Okay. So don't try and guess. Don't blurt
okay.
it out.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay. So you have three choices. Okay. And again, all three of these are real state mottos, but only one of them is the state motto of Texas. Okay. So you have A, industry. B, friendship, or C, united in pride and hope.
I know this one. Tejas is Texas. The original name Tejas means friendship, so it is friendship.
That it is. Very good. Excellent. All right. Thank you very much, Jim.
Awesome.
So, yeah. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jim O'Kane?
Well, we are. If you'll wait, if everybody hunker down and wait until December, we're coming out with a new show. This is the first movie I've done from the 21st century, and we're going to be covering.
This is also my first 21st century movie.
Well, we're on par then. We're finally getting out to people who may have, you know, movies people have may have seen. We're going to be diving into the MCU for the first time, and we're going to be talking with the director Joe Johnston of his epic Captain America, the First Avenger, and the first episode is going to be released December 1st, 2025. So if you're listening to this after December 1st, 2025, go look. We're available. Well, probably all the places that you can listen to Movie Rob's different podcasts. We're going to be available on Spotify and iTunes and all that other stuff. So check us out for the Captain America Minute.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.